recording again.
Again. For the second time, now that I got my podcast recorder working.
Oh, I wasn't going to tell them that you screwed up the first one.
Everybody knows how I screw up.
Okay. Is your throat clear? Because there's a lot of science we got to push through that throat this morning.
Yeah, it's as clear as it's going to get with these summer allergies. So,
Oh, yuck. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get into part two of our nutrient extravaganza.
You bet.
We couldn't fit the little micronutrients in the first episode. There was no room for them.
We barely fit the secondary nutrients in there.
This is true. It's like the middle child. They kind of get the short shrift anyway.
They do. Yep. Tell me about it.
So before I let you expound on all that, you can guzzle down some coffee. I'm going to just do some very brief housekeeping.
Go for it.
All righty. Just want to, thump our chest a little bit here. We just broke past 900 followers on Instagram.
Nice.
I don't know why or how. I suspect it is partially some of my independent followers who follow my TikTok dancing and who have hopped over to the podcast. If that's the case, welcome. If you don't know anything about my TikTok dancing, it's probably best we leave it at that.
Yes, please.
Okay. So the other thing I just have to say is a thank you to all of you, and this has to be to some degree word of mouth, is that while podcast listens on a global scale are down about 30%, and most podcasting is listened to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday-ish when people are commuting or running around and doing their beginning of the week errands, getting ready for the week on the farm, our listens are up. We've got higher downloads than we've had in the past, in the last 6 weeks or so. So thank you for telling your friends. Thank you for maybe listening 5 and 6 times. I don't know. Maybe that's what's happening. To your point, James, before this is, it is growing season in North America. So this is when folks are looking for answers to things. And we're happy to provide some answers and maybe a chuckle or two along the way.
Chuckle or two.
Just a chuckle or two. We try to keep it serious.
Mm.
Yeah.
Since when?
I don't know.
Are you talking about your other podcast?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Certainly not my dancing.
Up. No, right.
Not the dancing. So thank you for listening. Give us some feedback. Tell us what else you want to hear. It is growing season in North America. And, we want to know what you want to know. If it's something we've already talked about because you're new, thank you for joining us and go listen to the back catalog.
Nice. You suppose that, too, that the reason podcast listening is down because most people listen to it on their car on their way to work?
That's absolutely why. Yeah, that's. Did I not say that? I guess I skipped that part. But that is why. That is the primary reason, at least that's the assumption as to why it's down, is folks are not driving anymore. I'm not listening to some of the podcasts I used to listen to because I'm not driving anymore. It's changed the dynamic. What's also interesting, though, is that the number of new podcasts being launched has jumped. And I think it's because people are bored and are dying for someone to hear what they have to say.
Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. Listen to me.
Yep. I've got something to say, even though I'm not wearing pants and haven't showered in 4 days and I'm stuck in my house.
And listen, to those people, what you have to say probably isn't all that important or interesting. Because those of us who have been trying to get people to listen to us for years still don't.
I will say for those people, I'd rather hear what they have to say than see what they look like at the moment.
True.
So if it's a choice, I'll listen.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Well, moving on.
Micronutrients.
Micronutrients today. Yeah. So we couldn't fit it all in the last episode, so we had to split her up. So when we last left our listener base.
Bum, bum, bum.
We just concluded the secondary nutrients, and to remind folks, primary, secondary, and micros, all the nutrients that are physiologically critical to plants. And as a reminder, sort of hierarchy of nutrients isn't listed in order of importance. They're listed in order of quantity. So how much the plant needs. So primary nutrients aren't primary because they're more important. They're primary because they're required in larger concentrations than, say, the micros. As a recap, the primaries, NPK, nitrogen, potassium, or nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And then the secondary nutrients, calcium, magnesium, and sulfur. That brings us to the micros. And the micros are, I don't want to say this, there's a bit of contention around micros. There always has been, because this is where you get pretty much all plant species use our primary and secondary, the same primary and secondary nutrients. They're all there. But when you get into micros, this is really where what we would call speciation. So the differences between species really start to show through in their physiology, because they'll require sometimes different micronutrients, right? Like some plants may not require any selenium at all, but other plants, depending on the environment they're growing in, absolutely need selenium or silicon. Hops don't really need either of those. So when we're talking about, when we go through these micronutrients, I'm going to hit the biggies. And some of you may say, yeah, but you didn't talk about zirconium. All right, get over yourself. We're going to talk about the major micros.
Nice. And when it comes to micros, wouldn't it be that if you've got healthy soil, if you've got fundamentally good soil, shouldn't the micros just naturally in nature usually be there in the appropriate concentrations?
Yes. But.
But.
I think we talked about this in the part one of this, but soil acidity or alkalinity, so soil pH, plays a major role in determining whether these nutrients are plant available. So your soil test may say, look, you've got plenty of molybdenum in the soil. Look at that. Molybdenum levels are high, but the soil pH may be such that it is not available. For instance, if your soil pH is below like a pH of 5, then molybdenum is completely unavailable. And so people wonder, like, well, what does pH have to do? Why do hops like, you know, pH of 6.5 to 7? You know, why does any plant like any pH range? It has to do with the availability of these nutrients. If it's, you know, some plants are able to make do with lower amounts of these micros than others. So that's one of the reasons why they like any given pH range. So if your soil is healthy, yeah, there you probably have these micronutrients in abundance. However, hops seem to require more of some of these micros than other plants might. And certainly when you're growing plants in a dense production scenario where you've got competing root systems because your plants are 3 feet apart and you've got, you know, 900 to 1,000 of them crammed into an acre, as opposed to, you know, your one viburnum bush on your property, you set up a scavenging scenario where you can deplete the soil of these micros. And we don't want that. So let's teach everybody what these micros are, what they do, why they're important, and what to do if you don't have enough of them.
Sounds good.
I'm going to focus on zinc, molybdenum, manganese, iron, and boron. Those are going to be the major ones that we manage agronomically. Hops do use other micros. They use copper. They use nickel. Chromium, all these things can be found inside of a hop plant when you dissect all the elements out. But these are the micros that are agronomically important, where you might run into shortages in the soil or things that we might have to add as a foliar. Or sometimes you'll hear me, certainly the Discord folks will hear me talk about micro packages, and these are fertilizer packages that you put in with a spray, usually a fungicide application, that if you're going through the field, you might as well throw, you know, if you need a micronutrient application, throw that micro package into your spray tank and go. A note here, just like I sort of alluded to before, if you have a tissue deficiency, so if you're doing a tissue test, and that's the best way to determine your micronutrient requirements, not necessarily the soil. Again, because soil chemistry and certainly pH can play a massive role in making it available or not to the plant. So it's best to do a tissue test. So if your tissue test comes back showing, yep, you're low in zinc or you're low in manganese, then a foliar application is the way to go. Because if it's not available from the soil and you put it on the soil, it's not going to work out so well for you, because the plant's not going to get a hold of it anyway.
Sure.
So we usually put these micros in a formulation that can be absorbed through the leaf tissue. Okay. All right. So let's talk about these. Let's talk about zinc. So zinc, of all the micros, zinc is most likely to show up as a deficiency, certainly in Cascade for whatever reason. Cascade shows early season zinc deficiency all the time, and specifically in year two of Cascade establishment. Zinc is really important because it's of the micros that's involved in regulating plant hormone production that controls internode elongation. So we talk about, you know, how you want your space between your leaf nodes kind of short. You don't want to really stretched out. Well, if you have an imbalance in zinc, the hormone production that controls that internode elongation gets all wonky, and you can get excessively long internode length.
Internode elongation.
Really. Internode elongation. Yep.
I'm still floored from 5 minutes ago when speciation didn't kill my spell checker, but go on.
zinc, big deal in hormone production, big deal in protein formation. It is positively charged, right? So it is held in the soil complex on the cation exchange capacity, but again, is only available based on soil pH, right? At low pH and high pH, zinc can actually become toxic. So you can actually have too much zinc available at low and high pH. So you get that hop right in the sweet zone, you know, 6.5 to 7.5 soil pH, and it's happy there's enough zinc there. Once zinc gets into the plant, it's kind of complicated. Well, actually, all these micros are complicated in terms of its mobility. We talked last time in our primary and secondary nutrients about, you know, whether things were mobile or not, whether they were fixed in the plant tissue, and whether the plant could basically release them from old tissue and move them to new tissue. Zinc is kind of squirrely in that when the soil zinc level is adequate, it actually will move from in the plant, will move from old leaves to younger leaves and sort of backfill the old leaves. When that happens, you can see that the old leaves, you're like, huh, wow, it's getting sort of weird looking, tiger stripey, like we talked about magnesium in the old leaves. You're usually not seeing that until mid to late season. And at that point, you're likely to have stripped those leaves off anyway. That's why you don't see these zinc mobility deficiency symptoms, because you've taken the leaves off. That's when there's enough zinc in the soil. That's like normal zinc mobility in the plant. You'll see that. However, when the availability in the soil is low, like you don't have enough of it, that transport to the new leaves from the old leaves is delayed or stopped, creating the deficiency symptoms in the growing tip, in the new stuff. And usually that shows up in the tip or the middle of the growing region, looking like that. We call that member intervenal chlorosis, the tiger striping. Depending on where you're noticing these zinc deficiency symptoms in your plant will tell you a lot about where the issue lies. Is it a low soil concentration issue, or is it an adequate soil concentration issue, and it just so happens to be this is part of, and it's in the lower canopy, just happens to be part of the natural physiology of this plant.
So you can actually use the visual cues here to determine if it's a pH problem versus an application problem.
Right. Just purely observational can sort of get you in the right spot here. The other thing you're going to notice a bit different, people say, well, wait a minute, James, you said that intervenal chlorosis, the tiger striping, is the same as magnesium. It is. You'll see that. But unlike with magnesium, zinc, you're going to see also these sort of brown, angular, broken, like desiccated lesions on the leaf surface, and the shape of the leaf, certainly in the young and mid canopy growth, won't look quite right. It'll be misshapen. And that can, there's no like standard geometry of what that misshapen looks like. It just looks wonky, again, because of zinc's role in plant hormone production that drives those leaf shapes. In really bad scenarios, you'll just, the overall plant will just be stunted. But that I have yet to see that. I typically see the tiger striping and general yellowing and chlorosis and new growth are in plants that are maybe, certainly early season, 2 to 3 to 4 feet tall.
And I would think in all these cases, I mean, the visual cues are your indication that that's your oh shit moment, that there's a problem. But you still want to do, to your point, the tissue sample and the soil test to narrow in on exactly where the issues. And of course, the real kicker is when you've got multiple issues going on and you're seeing a variety of things happen at once that are interfering with each other.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah. So two parts to that. The first part, testing. Absolutely. You absolutely need a soil test. Well, James, you said if, you know, I should be putting these on foliar because if I have a soil problem, then, you know, there's no point in putting it on the soil. Right, Batman, but you don't know whether or not you have a soil problem unless you test it. Mm-hmm. So get your soil test to know, you know, can you put it on the soil or not? You're like, oh, crap, my soil pH is really low. That's going to create all sorts of other issues. You need to know that instead of just guessing. So do that first. Then we do a tissue test to see where your plant is at in its nutrient uptake, because it's not just soil pH and soil chemistry that can create uptake issues, nutrient uptake issues. It could be, you know, infection events. It could be virus load. It could be all sorts of stuff. So taking samples, tissue samples for testing and monitoring your overall plant health is one of the key factors to really driving towards these commercial yields we keep talking about, and taking them early and often enough that you can tweak your foliar applications and tweak some of your soil applications for nutrients at the right point in the season where you can still make up some ground if you have some deficiency symptoms. That was a lot of words.
Yep. So I'll summarize that into there's no book of pictures of deficiencies that's going to allow you to tweak your prescription plan just based on what things look like.
No way. Because more likely than not, I think you mentioned it, you're going to have confounding factors. There's going to be more than one thing going on. Unfortunately, for folks listening, it just takes experience to sort of suss those apart and figure out, yep, oh yeah, you got some magnesium deficiency and it looks like you got a little bit of wilt or you got a little bit of something else going on. So
I just find that, you know, the fact that zinc can be toxic at low and high pH and you can very easily look, the natural recourse, oh, I've got a zinc deficiency, I'll add more. You can be creating more harm than good. You've got to thread the needle there.
Yep.
And it's about having all the right information in front of you.
It is. And all those thresholds of low and high or toxic and deficient, they're a little different for every single nutrient. So threading the needle means having your pH sort of right in the middle, right in the sweet spot, which is 6.5 to 7.5. Oh, it's all coming together. Okay, so that's zinc. Zinc is important. In some cases, zinc, certainly when hops are growing quickly, they're in the rapid slope, steep slope of their linear growth. They're taking up so much nitrogen so quickly that zinc can't get in through the same port. So zinc and nitrogen, nitrate, use the same or similar ports. Antiports and symports and how they get in the plant, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, you can actually grow yourself into a zinc deficiency symptoms because of how quickly the plant is growing. It can't take up zinc fast enough because of all the nitrogen that's being taken up. Not at all uncommon. I see that all the time, especially in Cascade. Same thing. You might get some nitrogen chlorosis in those young plants. Don't freak out. They will grow out of it. End of story. Okay, moving on. That was zinc.
Oof.
Yep, pretty important. Let's talk about molybdenum. Not only is it really important micronutrient, it's super fun to say.
I was assuming that you would do all the rest and ask me what you forgot just to make me say it.
No, I've got some other elements I could make you say. Ooh, that sounds like a really fun podcast episode.
Well, we did bingo maybe about a year ago with all the crazy words. It may be time for a refreshed bingo card.
All right. Let's see here.
Molybdenum,
yes.
That's what I said.
Molybdenum. Mo, M-O. So molybdenum is a catalyst for enzyme and protein formation, and as part of what we call the electron transport chain in photosynthesis. So it's important. Let's just say that. I don't want to get into the electron transport chain. Without molybdenum, the process of photosynthesis, so the act of taking photons, light particles, and turning them into sugar in the plant, completely fails. Kind of important molecule or element, molybdenum. But it's, again, not, there's not a lot of it used, but it is extremely important. It's also plays a key role in changing nitrates that this, you know, nitrogen form that hops want. So that comes into the plant as a nitrate form, and then it's changed into ammonium for amino acid production. So amino acids are building blocks of proteins and enzymes. If you don't have molybdenum there, that whole process stops, and the hops have a real bad day. So we want to make sure we have plenty of it here. Its availability in the soil drops off like a cliff when the soil pH gets down below 6.5. And it's almost completely inaccessible by the time the soil pH gets down to 5. So unlike zinc, where when the soil pH gets too low, it can become toxic, molybdenum just becomes unavailable. It turns into a mineral. It can't be accessed by plants. So again, if you're down below 6.5, and I know some of you are, you might see yourself getting into some molybdenum deficiency symptoms. It's typically, you have to keep in mind, you're like, okay, I got to get some molybdenum. I'm going to call my co-op and have them blend in some molybdenum. They're going to laugh at you. They're going to say, what? We don't use that in corn.
Wow. Okay.
So you're not going to find it. It's going to have to go on foliarly. Keep that in mind. Your deficiency symptoms are going to show up in the old leaves because it's very mobile in the plant. It's going to move around all over the place. It may show up as a nitrogen deficiency. Like you're going to look at it, you'll be like, "Oh, my old leaves are getting yellow. It's got to be nitrogen." But here's the key thing. If it's molybdenum, those leaves are going to get kind of crinkly and kind of cup and curl upwards, not down. If you're starting to see yellowing and it's starting to curl, those leaf margins are curling upwards and turning into a cup, that is an absolute dead giveaway for molybdenum deficiency. And the edges of the leaf will be all wonky and misshapen. When you get to that level, you've probably already got some stunting and the plant's not happy in general because it's not effectively photosynthesizing, but it can be corrected through foliar application.
So the visibility of it, the curled leaves and all that, but the plant stunting is the problem, I'll say, with the crop.
And overall just plant decline, because again, the plant can't grow and be vigorous if it can't effectively photosynthesize. If your molybdenum is too low and you've got a poor ability to complete the photosynthetic process, your plant's going to stunt. Not to mention the fact that molybdenum is important in changing nitrate to ammonium for amino acids. You're not going to have enough building blocks for enzymes and proteins in order to grow your plant. So the overall plant's going to be stunted.
So here's a question just in general about all of these. Can you have these deficiencies without the physical symptoms presenting necessarily?
Yes. So absolutely.
It gets back to the importance of just continuously testing and looking for, and, oh, my numbers are low, but the leaves aren't curling, so I guess I shouldn't change my plant. I mean, you mentioned everyone having low, you know, a lot of people having low soil pH. Mm-hmm. You can have these molybdenum, man, I just got that. You can have these molybdenum deficiencies blah, 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 and not see a leaf impact, but you will end up seeing a stunting impact when it's too late.
Right. All of these, you know, so the deficiency symptoms and visual cues we keep talking about, I mean, these are severe and they rarely get to that level. So you can have, let's call suboptimal, let's not call it deficient. You can have suboptimal levels that are overall impacting your plant performance and just wondering why. It's like, wow, look at these. Everybody else's centennial look great. My sidearms are short and stubby. Why? Or I'm just not getting the yield that I need. And I'm, man, my timing's right. I'm confident of that. But I don't see any zinc problems, let's say, or, you know, sulfur. Well, because you may have not hit the deficiency threshold, but you are certainly suboptimal in your concentration. So in many cases, farmers will say, well, I'm just going to throw in a micro package, you know, just to top it off and make sure everything's okay. Right. But as we start focusing more and more on these micronutrients, yes, they're extremely important. They're needed in small quantities. That means your tolerance, your over-under tolerance for toxic is really tight. Mm-hmm. Applying too much just to be on the safe side could completely screw you. So we're talking about a high degree of horticulture here as we're looking at our tissue analysis and saying, where am I? And at what point do I pull the trigger and say, I have to go here and add this, or man, I got to hold back, or exactly how we execute that.
Yep. And I'm going to throw out the old things we say every year when it comes to everything, which is that your neighbor's prescription plan, I can't speak today. Your neighbor's prescription plan will likely not be your prescription plan. And your prescription plan from last year, very yep. likely, will. It's not a set it and forget it and rinse and repeat type of situation. You got to continue. I think you mentioned we had, what, 6 different soil types across the farm? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So constant testing.
Yep. And people are like, how many tests do you do, James? These things are expensive. It's not like I'm testing every week. You know, when you first get your yard installed and the plants are 2-3 years old and you're still don't have a lot of, you know, gray hair over this, you may be testing more frequently than, let's say, I did at, you know, 10 or 15 years into this. You have a sense for what your soil is going to do, how those plants are going to respond, and you're sort of worked yourself into a rhythm, knowing that, yeah, up there on that knob of soil where it's really sandy and rocky, and I know that my pH is a little lower, I know I'm going to have some, you know, micronutrient accessibility issues. So I'm going to make sure that I go in there with a micro package. But because that soil pH is low, I can't really have too much zinc in there because I could drive the plant over the edge with toxicity. So I have to look for something that's, you know, got more molybdenum and manganese in it and less zinc. Yeah, it's, you know, we're into the weeds now about dialing in your production to maximize your yield. That's what it takes.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. That was molybdenum. Dinum-num-num.
Molybdenum. Say it that's three fun times to say. Fast. Oh, yes, that's fun to say. Crying out for a limerick, but okay.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Another M element. Manganese. MN. Again, a lot of these micros play roles in photosynthesis. Manganese also plays a role in photosynthesis and sugar production. How do I want to say this? Simply by being low and not deficient, right? So suboptimal in manganese, because of its role in converting sunlight to sugar, just being suboptimal is believed to play a major role in plant yield reduction. Even though it may, you get your soil test or your tissue test back and it says, you know, manganese, you know, low to moderate, that may be low to moderate, but still in the quote, okay range for plant health may still be too low. I don't want a lot of people, this is usually what happens. I give this detailed talk on micros and nutrient management, and everybody suddenly says, oh, I've got a nutrient problem because my yields are low. It's usually something else. It's usually not, you know, yield is not associated with a single easy button, right? So it's usually not that. However, this particular micronutrient, manganese, has been associated specifically with lower yields when all other factors, all other observational cues would say you've got a healthy plant. Again, tissue test, tissue test, tissue test. But what does it look like when it is kind of tough to diagnose because they're the deficiency symptoms are really subtle. Again, probably why we see a high association with yield reduction is because visual cues for deficiency are really subtle and hard to spot. And by the time you notice it, it may be too late for the season. Usually you're going to see them in the younger leaves as a really, really faint interveinal chlorosis, so yellowing in between the veins. Really, really bad deficiency. The whole leaf will kind of go yellow, maybe with a little splotchy green, but with a bunch of tiny little brown spots. Tiny. And what's happening is that it's the tissue, leaf tissue in between the little microveins in the leaf breaking down. And a lot of people misassociate or misdiagnose that as spider mite damage. It is not. It's a severe manganese deficiency. But you get to that point, you've got a serious problem. you should be able to spot that in the tissue test pretty early on. But luckily, it's readily absorbed, the nutrients readily absorbed through the leaves. It's usually found as manganese sulfate, as if you want to put it on as a granular under the soil. But it's pretty present in most foliar feed formulations. Manganese is important.
And it sounds like, to your point, once you see it, it's almost too late. So it's another one of those where it's about the testing more than the physical manifestation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Most of these are. Let's talk about iron, Fe. A lot of folks think about iron as, you know, making your plants nice and green and healthy. But iron has absolutely nothing to do. There's no iron in chlorophyll. As we talked last time, right? Magnesium is the center of the chlorophyll molecule, not iron. I'm like, well, what the hell? Why does iron, you know, they sell iron sprays to make your lawn nice and green. So you put it on a week before you have your garden party, right? Why do you add iron to give it a fast green up? Well, iron is a key contributor to enzymes in the formation of chlorophyll. So if you have more iron helps facilitate chlorophyll. It's going to make more chlorophyll, but there is no iron in chlorophyll. So that's how that works. It's also like molybdenum, iron plays a role in nitrate and ammonium availability as well as sulfate availability within the plant. So again, pretty important job it has to do. It's got a fairly wide range, soil pH range of availability, so 4 up to almost 8. But as the pH gets higher, over about 7.5 and certainly over 8, its availability just drops off like a rock. So here, we're on the other side, right? We're on the other side of availability in the soil, where we talked about molybdenum, where if it goes lower than 5, it drops off, availability drops off. Here, iron is going the other direction. If the soil pH is too high, it drops off like a rock and becomes mineralized, and it's just not going to be available. So again, we're back into that sweet spot, right? Into that 4 or 6 to 7.5 range. Very, very important. Iron is not really very mobile within the plant. So that means you're going to see the deficiency symptoms in the young leaves first. And it's going to just be yellow. It's going to be, the leaves are going to be yellow, except for like the main leaf veins, which will still be green. So it's very striking. It's not tiger striping. It's like all yellow with like pinstriped green veins in very deficient scenarios. Overwatering and over application of lime to the soil is also known to drive iron deficiency, even though soil tests will say you got plenty of iron there. Well, yeah, but the soil pH is too high now. Iron foliar feeding is the most effective way for treating the deficiency, even if your soil pH is in the right range. So easily absorbed through the leaf cuticle, and could be pretty much put in with any spray that you're going to go on with it at that given time. Iron.
So it sounds like that is, to your point, very bold looking, but again, kind of too late at that point to see what to fix.
Right. And it's this one, because it's not mobile, is going to show up in the young tissue, not in the old tissue. Last but not least, the
boron.
the micro that every hop grower focuses on, because they're told, well, it's really critical. Well, all of these are really critical. But yes, we're going to talk about boron. And Boron, I put last because, man, it has the tightest range in terms of deficiency to toxicity. Boron is essential in hormone production. It's essential in, specifically in a hormone called fluorogen, which is what is responsible, one of the ones that's responsible for burr formation, flower set. And it's important in internode elongation. If you have too little or if you have too little, obviously you're going to see really poor flower set. You're going to see really shortened internodes the further you get out to the end of the sidearm, even to the point where the ends of the sidearms, the tips, kind of dry out and snap off. And the sidearms themselves may be generally kind of stunted. Not to be confused with aerial downy spikes. They won't show that, you know, severe internode shortening and downward cupping leaves. The internodes will become shortened, not like stacked up on each other, and they will be brittle and snap off in the ends. I want to give you a little idea here of the difference between too little boron and too much boron on an acre. As a fertilizer, if you're putting on a pound of boron, it's probably too little. If you're putting on 2 pounds of boron, it's toxic.
Jeez.
Per acre. I highly recommend any boron applications go on as a foliar, and only if your tissue test says you need it. Because it is no joke. Not only can it cause toxicity, too much can kill your plant. People say, well, I need boron for good flowering. You do. And in most cases, the soil's got plenty. It's got that you know, availability range issue where if it's too low or too high, you're not going to be able to get it out of the soil. But it, don't play around with it. It's no joke. Don't guess and say, well, I'm supposed to put boron on because some university publication says I need to. Yeah, only if your tissue test says you need it.
I'm pretty sure we threw a moron joke in there last time as we were covering this. Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. There we go. That's micros. And we were afraid we weren't going to fill up an entire episode with the micros.
We were. I was going to talk about my TikTok channel for another 20 minutes if we needed to. But
oof. Yeah, no.
Nah, no one needs that.
Yep.
No one needs that. Wow. That is a lot of... a lot of science. And I noticed once you started talking, the whole throat clearing and allergy thing kind of went to the side. The science pushed everything else out of its way.
It did. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling great now.
Oh, Lord. Now you need to find some other people to talk science to for the rest of the day because I don't want to hear anymore personally.
I'll just talk to myself. I'll go out to the shop and talk science to myself.
Nice.
That's what I do most days anyway.
I imagine it is.